A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He takes a handful of medications daily, uses an app called Guava, but keeps hitting the same wall a lot of people hit. He'll pop a pill while doing dishes or folding laundry. It's so automatic he doesn't log it, and 5 minutes later he's standing there thinking, did I take it or didn't I? And he's asking two questions. One, what actually works better for real-world compliance? The old-school pill counter, the medication app, or some combination of both? And two, if you can safely take all your meds at once, is there any actual reason to spread them out across the day? Or is dose splitting just making your life harder for no benefit?
I love this question because it surfaces the gap between what works in a clinical trial and what works when you're standing in your kitchen holding a sponge. And the research on this is genuinely surprising. The assumption most people make is that apps should outperform pill organizers because they're smarter, they ping you, they track things. But the evidence doesn't really bear that out. A big systematic review in JAMA Internal Medicine back in 2019 looked at something like 50 studies across multiple interventions. Reminder calls, smart bottles, apps, blister packs, pill boxes, and the single most effective low-tech intervention was the humble multi-compartment pill organizer.
The kind that rattles when you pick it up and has those little pop-top lids labeled Monday through Sunday.
That's the one, and the effect wasn't small. Across several studies, pill organizers improved adherence by somewhere between 15 and 25 percentage points compared to bottles alone. And here's the part I find fascinating. The mechanism isn't just about reminding you to take the pill, it's about removing what behavioral economists call the, did I take it? If you have a Monday PDOC compartment and it's empty, you know you took it. If it's full, you didn't. The pill organizer functions as an external memory system, not just a scheduler. And apps, for all their sophistication, actually struggle with this specific problem because they depend on you logging the dose. If you forget to log, the app's record is wrong, and now you've got ambiguity on top of ambiguity.
The app introduces a second task, taking the pill and then recording that you took the pill, and the pill organizer collapses those into one physical action. You open the lid, you take what's inside, the empty compartment is your record.
And there's a researcher at Harvard, Nitish Chaudhary, who's done a lot of work on this. He basically argues that the best adherence interventions are the ones that reduce the number of steps between I should take my medication, and I have taken my medication. Every additional step is a failure point.
Which makes me think about the Guava app specifically. It's actually quite good. Clean interface, interaction checking, inventory tracking. But the logging step is still a logging step. You can set reminders, but if you dismiss the reminder and then get distracted by a child or a phone call, you're back to square one.
Guava does have a feature where you can check off medications in bulk, which helps. But the fundamental issue remains. It's a separate action. Now, some newer smart pill bottles attempt a middle ground with a sensor in the cap that registers when the bottle is opened, so the logging is automatic. But that only works if you're opening the bottle to take the pill, and it doesn't solve the multi-medication problem unless you've got one smart bottle per prescription, which gets expensive and cluttered fast.
If I'm hearing you right, the evidence says the pill organizer is actually the winner on pure compliance metrics, and apps are supplementary at best.
I put it this way, for the specific problem of, did I take my afternoon dose or didn't I? The ambiguity problem. The pill organizer is the gold standard. Nothing beats physical evidence. For the broader problem of medication management, refill reminders, interaction checking, tracking side effects over time, having a portable record for doctor visits, that's where apps shine. The ideal system, and this shows up in a few studies including a 2022 review in the Journal of Medical Internet Research, is both. Pill organizer for daily dosing, app for the management layer.
The pill counter isn't obsolete. It's just been incorrectly positioned as a competitor to the app when they're actually complementary tools.
And I think part of why people resist the pill organizer, and the prompt mentions being a digital native, is that it feels geriatric. Nobody wants to be 27 years old with a 7-day pill box on their kitchen counter.
The pharmacy equivalent of a shower grab bar.
I'd argue that's a branding problem, not a functionality problem. There are actually some quite nice ones now. A company called Ellie makes sleek magnetic modular ones almost look like something Apple would design. The stigma is real, but the utility is undeniable.
I do wonder about one thing. The prompt mentions taking medications while doing chores. So the pills are in hand, swallowed, and then the doubt arrives. If the pills came from a labeled compartment, wouldn't that solve it? You'd just glance at the compartment later.
Yes, but only if you go back to look. The pill organizer works best as a fixed location habit. It lives on the counter or the nightstand, and you go to it. If you're pre-pouring pills into your hand and wandering off to fold laundry, you've broken the spatial anchor.
We're really talking about two failure modes. One is forgetting to take the medication at all. The other is taking it, but then forgetting that you took it. The pill organizer solves the second one only if you check the compartment. The app solves neither, unless you log.
And this is where some of the newer research on habit stacking comes in. There's a behavioral scientist at Stanford, BJ Fogg, who talks about anchoring new habits to existing ones. For medication, the strongest anchor is usually a meal or bedtime, something that already happens in a fixed location. If you always take your afternoon meds at the kitchen table right after lunch, and the pill organizer lives on the kitchen table, the whole chain becomes harder to break.
Which brings us to the second part of the prompt. The question of whether spreading doses across the day is actually necessary or just burdensome.
Let me start with the straightforward case. If all your medications can be taken together, meaning no documented interactions, no food requirements, no timing-dependent mechanisms, is there a physiological downside to taking them all at once? The answer, broadly, is no, assuming your doctor or pharmacist has confirmed compatibility. Two big caveats. The first is pharmacokinetics, how the body processes drugs over time. Some medications are designed to be taken at specific intervals because their concentration in the blood needs to stay within a certain window. If you take a twice-daily medication as a single double dose, you might spike above the safe range and then drop below the effective range before the next dose. That's how you get side effects in the morning and breakthrough symptoms at night.
The dosing schedule isn't arbitrary. It's matched to the drug's half-life.
Metformin is a good example. The extended-release version is once daily, but the immediate-release version is typically twice daily because it clears faster. If you took both immediate-release doses at once, you get a bigger blood sugar dip than intended, and possibly more GI side effects. It's not dangerous in the sense of an acute emergency, but it's suboptimal.
The second caveat?
More subtle, and it's about the liver's cytochrome P450 system, the family of enzymes that metabolizes most drugs. If you take 5 medications at once, and 3 of them are processed by the same enzyme, CYP3A4, say, you're essentially creating a traffic jam in your liver. The drugs compete for the same metabolic pathway, which can raise blood levels of some and reduce the effectiveness of others.
Even if there's no direct drug-to-drug interaction flagged in the database, you could still be creating a bottleneck.
Interaction checkers like the one in Guava or Drugs.com do account for this to some degree, but it's not always flagged as a hard contraindication because the effect is often graded. It depends on dose, on individual metabolism, on what else is in the mix. Spreading doses out by even a couple of hours can reduce that competitive inhibition significantly.
There is a case for splitting, but it's not the blanket, don't take everything at once, intuition people sometimes have. It's specific to the drugs involved.
And the third factor, which isn't pharmacokinetic but practical, is side effect stacking. Even if the drugs are metabolically compatible, taking them all at once can mean experiencing all their side effects at once. If 2 of your meds cause drowsiness and 1 causes nausea, taking them together means you get hit with drowsiness plus nausea simultaneously. Spacing them by an hour or 2 can smooth that out.
That's a quality of life thing, but it's not trivial. If taking everything at once makes you feel terrible every afternoon, you're going to start skipping doses. So there's a compliance argument for splitting too.
The question is whether the complexity of multiple dosing times causes more missed doses than the side effects of single dosing cause skipped doses, and that's going to vary by person and by medication regimen.
There's no universal answer. It depends on the specific drugs, their half-lives, their metabolic pathways, and how you personally react to the side effect load.
And I want to mention one more thing that gets overlooked. There's a concept in pharmacology called pill burden, usually used to describe the total number of pills someone takes per day, but researchers are increasingly looking at regimen complexity as a separate variable. It's not just how many pills, it's how many different dosing times, whether there are food restrictions, whether pills need to be split. And regimen complexity is a stronger predictor of non-adherence than raw pill count.
Which would argue for consolidating dosing times wherever safe.
If you can move from 3 dosing times to 1, you've reduced regimen complexity substantially, and the evidence says that improves adherence. But the key phrase is, wherever safe. And that's a conversation with a pharmacist, not a solo optimization project.
Let me pull on a thread here. You mentioned the pill organizer as the gold standard for the ambiguity problem. But what about the compliance problem? Actually remembering to take the medication in the first place. I've seen studies suggesting that even with organizers, adherence drops off over time.
Even with the best interventions, pill organizers, apps, text reminders, smart bottles, long-term adherence for chronic medications tends to hover around 50 to 70%. For asymptomatic conditions like hypertension or high cholesterol, it can be even lower. People stop taking their statins not because they forget, but because they don't feel any different on them.
The absence of feedback.
If taking the pill produces no perceptible effect, the brain eventually deprioritizes it. This is one area where apps can actually help. Some of them let you track biomarkers over time, so you can see your blood pressure trending down or your A1C improving. That creates a feedback loop that pill organizers can't provide.
The app gives you the why, and the organizer gives you the weather.
That's a nice way to put it.
I want to talk about a specific scenario from the prompt. He describes taking a medication while doing chores. The act is so habitual, it doesn't register consciously, and then he can't remember. This is a fascinating cognitive phenomenon. It's not forgetting in the normal sense. It's more like the action was performed by the procedural memory system, the same one that lets you drive to work and not remember the drive.
It's automaticity. And the problem with automaticity in medication is that it's great for consistency. You're taking the pill without having to muster willpower, but terrible for episodic memory. You don't form a distinct memory of the event because it wasn't distinct enough from all the other times you did it.
Like trying to remember if you locked the front door. You've done it 3,000 times, so no single instance stands out.
And the fix for this, according to the cognitive psychology literature, is to introduce something distinctive into the routine. Not a whole new system, just a small sensory marker. Some people say the name of the medication out loud as they take it. Some people do a specific physical gesture, tap the counter twice, something like that. It sounds silly, but it creates a memory tag.
The sloth equivalent would be taking the pill and then immediately taking a nap.
For you, everything ends in a nap, so that's not exactly distinctive.
But the gesture idea is interesting. It's like a manual log entry. Performed with the body instead of the phone. It costs nothing, requires no device, and takes half a second.
As a supplement for the specific, did I already take it? Problem. It's got some evidence behind it.
Let's circle back to the app versus organizer question with some actual numbers. You mentioned the JAMA review. What did the smart apps actually show?
The results were mixed. Some studies showed modest improvements, 5 to 10 percentage points over usual care, but others showed no significant difference. And app effectiveness is hugely variable by age, by tech comfort, by how many medications someone's on, and by how the app handles the logging burden. An app that requires manual logging for every dose shows worse results than one that uses passive sensing or simplifies the check-in. Guava hasn't been studied in large randomized trials as far as I know. It's well regarded in the user community, strong privacy credentials, independent, not selling data to pharmacy benefit managers, which matters. But in terms of hard adherence outcomes, we just don't have RCT level evidence for it.
If someone asked you, what system shows the best results? Your honest answer would be the pill organizer plus a simple reminder system with an app as the management layer if you need the interaction checking and refill tracking.
That's where the evidence points, yes. And the specific design of the organizer matters. The multi-dose ones with separate compartments for morning, noon, evening, and bedtime outperform the simple once-daily ones when people are on complex regimens. There's a study from the University of Michigan that found the four times daily organizers reduced missed doses by about 30% compared to single compartment organizers for patients on three or more medications.
The ones where you fill them yourself versus the pre-filled pharmacy blister packs.
Pre-filled blister packs perform slightly better because they remove the filling step, which is itself a source of error, but they're less flexible. If your doctor changes a dose, you've got a month's worth of now-wrong blister packs. The self-filled organizer trades a small amount of filling error risk for much greater flexibility.
The trade-off favors self-filled for most people, especially if their regimen changes with any frequency.
Unless you've got a stable regimen and dexterity issues that make self-filling difficult, then the pharmacy-packed option is clearly better.
Let me ask you something from the clinical side. You were a pediatrician. In your practice, what did you actually see work for families managing multiple medications?
The families that did best were the ones who built medication into an existing non-negotiable routine and used a physical organizer. The ones who tried to manage it entirely through memory or through phone reminders alone struggled more. I remember one family with a child on three different seizure medications at three different times of day. They had a giant pill organizer that lived next to the cereal bowls. Breakfast, after school, bedtime. The organizer was right there. They said they'd tried an app and abandoned it within 2 weeks because it was just one more thing to manage.
The cereal bowl anchoring.
Location plus routine. I also saw that when families tried to consolidate dosing times without checking with me first, they sometimes ran into trouble. I had one parent who decided to give the morning and evening doses of a medication together at bedtime because mornings were too chaotic. The child started having breakthrough seizures during the day because the drug level was troughing.
The trough was hitting right when the child was active and at school, which is exactly when you need coverage.
The dosing schedule existed for a pharmacokinetic reason, not for convenience. Convenience optimization has to be done in partnership with someone who understands the pharmacology. It's not just, can these be taken together without an acute interaction? It's, will the blood levels stay in the therapeutic range across the whole day?
Which is a more subtle question. And I'd guess most medication apps don't model that.
They don't. The interaction checkers are looking for contraindications. Don't take these together or you'll get serotonin syndrome. Don't take these together or you'll get QT prolongation. They're not modeling the pharmacokinetic curve over 24 hours. That's a clinical judgment call.
The prompt's intuition that splitting is burdensome is correct. But the follow-up question, is there any reason not to take them all at once, has a real answer that's more than just ask your doctor. It's the dosing schedule exists to maintain therapeutic blood levels, and collapsing it can create peaks and troughs that undermine efficacy or increase side effects.
And I'd add that for some medications, the timing relative to food is critical. Taking levothyroxine with food reduces absorption by something like 20 to 40%. Taking certain osteoporosis medications requires you to stay upright for 30 minutes afterward. If you're consolidating everything into one dosing time, you might inadvertently be making one of your medications much less effective because of a food or posture requirement you didn't account for.
The dream of one and done. All pills at once a day, is achievable for some regimens and not for others. And figuring out which camp you're in requires more than just running an interaction check.
It requires a medication review with the pharmacist. And I want to emphasize pharmacists here. They're specifically trained in this. A good medication therapy management session, which is covered by Medicare and many private plans, will go through every medication, look at timing, look at interactions, look at whether any drugs can be deprescribed, and then recommend an optimized schedule. It's one of the most underused resources in medicine.
How long does that take?
A comprehensive MTM session is usually 30 to 60 minutes, and the output is often life-changing for people on 5-plus medications. I've seen cases where a pharmacist identified that two medications were competing for the same enzyme, recommended spacing them by 4 hours, and the patient's side effects resolved almost completely.
We've got three layers here. The organizer for the daily, did I take it problem? The app for the management layer, refills, interactions, tracking, and the pharmacist consult for the strategic layer. What should the schedule actually be?
That's the stack. And I think the prompt's frustration with apps is that they're being asked to do all three layers, and they're really only good at the middle one.
They're the spreadsheet, not the safe, and not the strategist.
Korn, let me push on one thing. You said the evidence favors the pill organizer, but is that evidence maybe skewed by the population studied? If the studies are mostly older adults, and the prompt writer is a younger digital native, does the conclusion still hold? That's a fair question. Most adherence studies do skew older because that's the population on multiple medications. But there was a study out of UCSF in 2021 that looked specifically at younger adults, ages 25 to 45, with chronic conditions requiring 3 or more daily medications. They compared app-only, organizer-only, and combined approaches. The organizer-only group had the highest adherence at 6 months. The app-only group had the highest initial satisfaction, but the sharpest drop-off.
The app feels better at first, but doesn't sustain.
The novelty wears off. The notification becomes background noise. You start dismissing it reflexively. The pill organizer doesn't have a novelty curve. It's just as boring on day 1 as it is on day 180. And that consistency turns out to be an asset.
The beige Toyota Corolla of medication management.
Nobody's excited about it, but it's still running perfectly at 200,000 miles.
What about the specific scenario where someone has already taken the pill but can't remember? You mentioned the gesture idea. Are there other techniques?
One that's been studied is the medication calendar, a simple paper sheet taped to the cabinet where you check off each dose immediately. Low-tech, zero friction. In a small trial with HIV patients on antiretrovirals, where adherence is literally life or death, the paper calendar outperformed text reminders and a basic app. The act of checking a box created just enough of a conscious moment to encode the memory.
It's physically co-located with the pills. The further the logging tool is from the pill bottle, the lower the odds you'll use it.
Location is everything. The Guava app on your phone, which might be in the other room when you're taking pills in the kitchen, is already at a disadvantage. Even if you always have your phone on you, unlocking the phone, opening the app, finding the right medication, and checking it off is 4 or 5 steps. The paper check mark is 1 step. The pill organizer's empty compartment is 0 steps.
0 steps is hard to beat.
In behavioral design, 0 steps almost always wins.
Let's talk about the load on your system concern from the prompt. The intuition that taking multiple medications at once, even if they're compatible, puts some kind of stress on the body. Is that a real thing?
It's mostly not a real thing in the way people imagine it. The liver and kidneys have enormous parallel processing capacity. But, and this is an important but, there is a phenomenon called pill-induced esophageal injury that's under-recognized. If you take a handful of pills with too little water, especially if you lie down soon after, the pills can lodge in the esophagus and cause localized irritation or even ulceration.
The physical act of swallowing 5 pills at once with a sip of water and then going back to chores could actually cause problems.
And certain medications are notorious for this. Doxycycline, alendronate, potassium chloride, some NSAI seeds. The recommendation is to take pills with a full glass of water and remain upright for at least 10 to 15 minutes. If you're consolidating multiple pills into one dosing time, you're swallowing more at once, which increases the risk if you're not careful about water volume and posture.
That's not a drug interaction thing, it's a mechanical thing. And it's almost never discussed in medication adherence conversations.
It should be. The practical advice is, if you're going to take everything at once, sit down, use a full glass of water, don't just toss them back while walking through the kitchen.
I want to zoom out for a second. We've been talking about tools and techniques, but there's a deeper question here about the cognitive load of chronic illness. Managing multiple medications is a part-time job that nobody applied for, and the prompt writer is basically asking, how do I make this job less error-prone without turning my life into a medication management project?
That's the tension. The more sophisticated the system, the more it demands of you. The pill organizer demands upfront effort. You have to fill it every week. But then, the daily effort is near zero. The app demands less upfront but more daily. And different people have different tolerances for those two types of effort.
I'm reminded of the concept of treatment burden. The workload of being a patient. There's a researcher at the University of Manchester, Frances Mayer, who's done a lot of work on this. She argues that treatment burden is a real harm that healthcare systems impose on patients, and minimizing it should be a clinical priority. If a doctor prescribes a medication with a complex dosing schedule without considering whether the patient can realistically integrate it into their life, that's a burden imposed.
If you're on 5 medications prescribed by 3 different specialists, nobody is looking at the total daily schedule and asking whether it's workable. The cardiologist prescribes one thing twice daily, the endocrinologist prescribes another thing 3 times daily, the psychiatrist prescribes a third thing at bedtime, and suddenly you need a spreadsheet just to know what to take when.
That's before we even get to the refill coordination problem. 3 different prescriptions, 3 different refill schedules, possibly 3 different pharmacies.
This is where medication synchronization programs, MedSync, can help. Some pharmacies will align all your refills to the same day of the month, so you're making one trip instead of 3. It's a simple, operational change that reduces burden meaningfully.
Does Guava help with that?
It tracks refill dates and can remind you, but it doesn't actually synchronize them with the pharmacy. That's a pharmacy side service.
To summarize where we've landed on the first question, the pill organizer is the evidence-based winner for the "did I take it?" problem. Apps add value for the management layer, and the ideal is both. And for the second question, taking everything at once is fine if your specific medications support it pharmacokinetically, but you need a professional review to know that, and you should be mindful of the mechanical swallowing issue.
That's the summary. And I'd add one more thing that I don't think gets said enough. The goal isn't perfect adherence. Perfect adherence is a fantasy. The goal is good enough adherence that the medications do what they're supposed to do. For most chronic medications, the therapeutic threshold is around 80%, meaning you can miss some doses and still get the clinical benefit. The system that gets you to 80% with the least stress is the right system, even if it's not the most technologically sophisticated one.
Good enough is underrated. You mentioned deprescribing earlier. Is that something people should be thinking about proactively?
One of the most effective ways to improve medication adherence is to reduce the number of medications. A lot of people accumulate prescriptions that were started for a good reason, but never reevaluated. The PPI they started during a stressful period 10 years ago. The sleep aid that became a permanent fixture. The statin dose that might be higher than needed. A medication review that includes the question, "Do you still need this?" can sometimes cut the pill count in half.
Which makes everything else easier.
It's the ultimate simplification strategy.
I want to go back to something you mentioned about the UCSF study. The finding that app users had the sharpest drop-off. That feels significant. It suggests that apps are good at onboarding but bad at maintenance.
I think it's partly notification fatigue and partly the fact that medication taking isn't inherently digital. It's a physical act involving physical objects. The app adds a digital layer to a physical process, and over time, the digital layer feels superfluous. You're already holding the pill bottle. Why are you also holding your phone?
The phone becomes the middleman nobody asked for, and middlemen get cut. What about voice assistants? Alexa, I took my afternoon meds. That seems lower friction than opening an app.
It is lower friction, and there's some preliminary evidence that voice logging improves adherence, especially for people with dexterity or vision limitations. But it reintroduces the logging step. You still have to remember to say it. And voice assistants have their own privacy issues, especially for health data. The only thing that truly eliminates the logging step is a system where the act of dosing and the act of recording are the same act. The pill organizer does that. A smart pill bottle that senses cap removal does that. Everything else adds a step.
Which brings us back to the organizer.
It keeps coming back to the organizer.
I feel like we should acknowledge the aesthetic objection more directly. The prompt writer is a digital native who's been resisting the pill counter. And I get it. There's something about filling a weekly pill box that feels like admitting defeat, or aging, or something.
And part of the resistance is that a pill organizer makes your medication load visible to yourself and to anyone who sees your kitchen counter. It's a constant physical reminder of illness. An app is private. It lives on your phone, behind a passcode. The organizer is public.
That's a real psychological cost. And I don't think the adherence literature engages with it enough. The studies measure whether you took the pill, not how you feel about the system that got you there.
And for some people, the privacy and dignity of an app-based system matters more than a few percentage points of adherence. If the organizer makes you feel terrible every time you see it, and that feeling makes you less likely to engage with your health overall, then the net effect might be negative even if the adherence numbers look better.
The right system isn't just the one with the best adherence stats. It's the one you'll actually use consistently without resenting it.
Which is why I think the combined approach, organizer for the mechanical reliability, app for the information layer, lets you keep the organizer tucked away in a cabinet rather than displayed on the counter. You don't need it to be a billboard. It just needs to be accessible when you dose.
You can get one that doesn't look like it was designed in 1987. The design options have improved. Modular magnetic systems. The industry is slowly realizing that people under 70 take multiple medications too.
About time, honestly.
Let me ask a practical question. If someone's listening to this and thinking, okay, I'll try the Organizer Plus app combo, what's the actual weekly workflow?
Once a week. Sunday evening works for most people. You sit down with your pill bottles and your organizer. You fill each compartment for the week. While you're doing that, you check the app to see if any refills are coming due, and you note any medications that are running low. The filling session takes maybe 10 minutes. Then during the week, you just go to the organizer at your dosing times. You don't need to log anything in the moment. If you want to track adherence over time, you can do a quick check-in at the end of the week. Glance at the organizer, see which compartments are still full, and log any missed doses in the app. But the daily friction is near zero.
The weekly filling session is also a natural moment to notice if you're running low on something, which prevents the "I'm out of my medication and the pharmacy is closed" crisis.
It builds inventory awareness into the routine without requiring a separate tracking habit.
That's elegant. It's like meal prepping, but for pharmaceuticals.
The Sunday pill prep. Some people even do it while listening to a podcast.
Speaking of which...
No, don't. I do want to circle back to one more thing about the taking everything at once question. There's a specific scenario worth flagging. If someone is on a medication that affects alertness, a sedating antidepressant, a benzodiazepine, an opioid, even some antihistamines, and they consolidate all their dosing to the afternoon, they might be inadvertently sedating themselves during the part of the day when they need to be functional. That's not a safety issue in the interaction sense, but it's a real functional impairment.
Timing matters not just for pharmacokinetics, but for aligning side effects with periods when they're least disruptive.
Taking a sedating medication at bedtime is strategic. Taking it at 2p, because that's when you take everything else, is less strategic. And apps don't generally flag this because it's not a contraindication. It's a quality of life optimization, which is another argument for the pharmacist consult. A human can say, you know, if you take the mirtazapine in the morning, you're going to be drowsy all day. Let's move that one to bedtime and keep the others in the afternoon.
It's the kind of nuance that algorithmic systems miss.
So we've covered the organizer evidence, the app evidence, the pharmacokinetics of dose consolidation, the mechanical swallowing issue, the treatment burden concept, the workflow, and the aesthetic objection. Is there anything major we haven't touched? The prompt mentions that taking medications has become habitual, and there's a paradox here. Habit is the goal. You want medication taking to be automatic, because automatic behaviors require less willpower. But as we discussed, automatic behaviors don't encode well in memory. So the very thing that makes adherence sustainable is also what creates the, did I take it?
The autopilot paradox.
And the solution isn't to make medication. Taking less automatic, that would reduce adherence overall. The solution is to externalize the memory. The pill organizer is an external memory. The paper checklist is an external memory. The app log is an external memory, but it depends on a manual input. The organizer is the only one that's automatically accurate, because the physical state of the compartment can't be wrong.
Unless you filled it wrong.
The filling error is the one failure mode of the organizer. But filling errors tend to be systematic. You notice if you put the wrong pill in the wrong compartment because it looks wrong. And the weekly filling session is a conscious, focused activity, not an automatic one, so errors are less likely than with daily automatic behavior.
Let's land the plane on this. What's the one-sentence answer to each of the prompt's two questions?
For the first, the pill organizer outperforms apps for the specific, did I take it, problem, but combining both gives you the best of physical reliability and digital management. For the second, taking multiple compatible medications at once is generally safe, but the dosing schedule often exists for a pharmacokinetic reason, and consolidating should be done with the pharmacist's input, not on your own.
The spirit of the answer is, pick the system that minimizes daily friction, not the one that feels most technologically sophisticated. Zero steps beats five steps almost every time.
The humble pill counter wins not because it's smarter, but because it's dumber. It doesn't need to be charged. It doesn't need to be updated. It doesn't send notifications. It just sits there holding the truth.
The stoic of the kitchen counter.
Corn. Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The longest recorded Yagligori, Turkish oil wrestling, match lasted from 9 in the morning until past midnight in the 1950s, ending only when both wrestlers were so exhausted and slick with oil that neither could gain a hold, and the judges declared it a draw. Meanwhile, the sport remains essentially unknown in Madagascar, which has never sent an oil wrestler to the Kirk Pinar Festival.
15 hours of oil wrestling ending in a draw.
A lot of olive oil.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps. You can find every episode at My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.